Hi guys, my name is Hirsch and I am a rising senior at Dartmouth College, and come listen to this episode of the One Fly Trio podcast. If you want to hear about my journey, my pre-med journey at Dartmouth, coming from South Carolina, where I talk about going to college so far away from home and navigating college essay writing, both for undergraduate admissions and now as I write my personal statement for med school admissions as a senior at Dartmouth.
One Fly Trio is a lively and engaging podcast designed to be your guide and mentor as you navigate the often challenging world of higher education. Your host, Linnell, a college admissions and financial aid guru.
And Rashid, a dedicated advocate for the success of underrepresented communities, team up with a rotating guest host who has lived the first generation, limited income, fly experience.
One Fly Trio will explore all aspects of the college journey, from college essays and financial aid and course selection to social life, internships, post-graduation plans, and more. We take a deep dive into the factors that contribute to success in college and beyond, demystifying areas that have historically been challenging for underrepresented communities.
Each episode is packed with real stories, expert advice, and actionable tips, all delivered in a fun, easy-to-digest format. Join us on One Fly Trio as we break down barriers, challenge stereotypes, and empower students to achieve their dreams. Because when it comes to success,
we're all in this together. Hirsch, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of One Fly Trio. Can you start things off by telling us a little bit about you? What is sort of your story that listeners should recognize and know about where you've come from to where you are today?
My name is Hirsch. I am a 25. Okay, at Dartmouth, we like go by our class year, so I'm always saying 25, and like no one knows what the heck I'm talking about. But that means I'm a rising senior, which is crazy. It's been 3 years already at Dartmouth, and I did high school. I graduated from high school in South Carolina. I say graduated from high school because I wasn't there my entire life. I spent most of my formative years from like third grade until 10th grade in Atlanta, Georgia, and then my family had to move to South Carolina right in the middle of high school, and then the pandemic hit. So I navigated college admissions virtually through the Zoom worlds. Never actually visited Dartmouth before I kind of applied and actually got here. But that's sort of how my college admissions was. But my family immigrated from India from about 20 to 25, 30 years ago, maybe. I get lost in the years. But when I say family, I mean like actually family. Like it wasn't just like my dad came, but my grandparents, my dad, my mom, like they all came to America in one big swoop. So that, I think that's a big part of my background in growing up. I always tell people like it was like I grew up in two countries at once, because outside of the walls of my house, I was in America going to school, going to McDonald's, going to Taco Bell. Within the walls of my house, I was in Gujarat, India. Like, even though my family immigrated here, like they're super traditional, super, super cultural. So yeah, that's a big part of my identity is growing up as a first generation American. Not only am I a first generation American, I'm also a first generation college student. Neither of my parents went to college. So that's also been a big part of my identity and definitely impacted how I navigated college admissions as a senior in high school. But yeah, let me know if there's other things that I missed that you could pry my brain for.
No, that was great in terms of just setting the stage for your background. And we'll, of course, peel back some of these onion layers as we go through. Linnell?
Well, and I'll start peeling that first layer a little bit. Was college always part of the path? Was that always part of your plan? Or do you remember sort of when it really kind of occurred to you that was your next step?
Yeah, I'd say college was always... Well, okay. I'd say college wasn't always part of my plan. It was definitely always part of my parents' plan. Like they made it like imperative that I made education my biggest priority growing up. I think partly because they didn't get the education that they could have had or the best education. So they viewed education as like a way to move up the socioeconomic ladder in the US, especially as an immigrant family. So for them, education was like, oh, they always made that the first priority in both my life and my brother's life. I have an older brother. He's 2 years older than me. But yeah, so I was always, college was always on my mind because of my parents since like probably elementary, middle school. Like I remember like my mom would like sit down and like make sure, like force me to do my homework even when I didn't want to. But I mean, all of that kind of paid off because then when I got to high school, I was pretty disciplined, and got my stuff together.
Well, and you know, you talked a little bit about having to have navigated the college admission process virtually. I imagine that discipline really helped when it came to having to do that, because I'm also guessing it meant you had to do it with a bit more independence.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of independence for sure. I mean, I had my older brother to kind of follow his footsteps, but I think we had very different college admissions cycles or processes. I think when he was applying, our family was still in Georgia and he was mainly looking at schools in Atlanta or in state. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to broaden my horizons for college. I wanted to put myself out there and force myself to be outside of my comfort zone. So I couldn't really follow in his footsteps in that regard for college admissions, because out-of-state admissions is very different than in-state admissions. But shoot, where was I going with this? I lost my train of thought.
Well, so let me ask you this. You know, for people who don't know Dartmouth well,
yeah.
You know, could you describe the campus a little bit so that people get the idea of, you know, you're coming from having had a lot of experience in a major metropolitan area and kind of contrast that with Dartmouth?
Yeah. I've been here for 3 years, so honestly, I love it. I'm also a tour guide, so I kind of get paid to say that I love it. But no, Dartmouth is located in Hanover, New Hampshire. It's right on the Connecticut River, on the border between New Hampshire and Vermont. It's like your like quintessential like New England town, very rural, very cute, a lot of old architecture. And then as far as the institution itself, it's an Ivy League institution. It's predominantly white. There is a lot of kind of legacy and colonial legacy built into just the campus and infrastructure. But that means that there's also a lot of resources for students. There is money floating everywhere on this campus. Like I have gotten so many different opportunities just because of the fact that it's like Dartmouth College. Like for example, I got paid to volunteer at a nonprofit back home during one of my breaks. So it was great for the nonprofit because I was volunteering with them. They get free labor, but it was great for me because Dartmouth was paying me. So I could also afford to volunteer at my nonprofit. So that's just an example of kind of the resources and opportunities that an institution like Dartmouth brings for its students. And I definitely don't think that would have been the case if I was, say, at the University of South Carolina.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Let me tell you, Hirsch, I really appreciate some of the things that you'd shared earlier just around your parents really emphasizing education, right? Being paramount. Went through similar experiences with my own parents, right? So that definitely helped light a fire under me in terms of setting me up as I continued going forward and having that drive and sort of focus on what's next. As you started looking for schools and locked into one, how did you come to a place where you made your decision on your major? So talk a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I always get asked this on my tours, but I think I mean, I kind of came in decided that I wanted to be pre-med. This is something that I've been wanting to do since high school. So I knew that about my Dartmouth education. Like, I wanted to do pre-med, but pre-med isn't a major. So you still have to major in something and find a major. And what's great about about Dartmouth is that every student comes in undecided. So everyone was undecided. They really encourage students to kind of explore different disciplines and figure out what it is they like before they commit to something for the rest of their time at Dartmouth. And I definitely did that. I took like a religion class my freshman fall. Definitely was not expecting to take a religion class in college. Very STEM heavy is what I was expecting. And I took an anthro class and I was like, wait, this is pretty cool. The study of humans, human societies, cultures, different social structures. That's what led me to anthropology. I had never heard of anthropology before coming to college. There's like this specific subfield of anthropology called medical anthropology, where it's all about studying kind of social structures or medical systems and viewing medical systems as a culture. Super, super cool. So I got into taking anthro classes and that's kind of what led me to finding anthropology. I found it a nice balance, especially to my pre-med education, because I get the sciencey stuff of medicine in terms of learning the organic chemistry, the biochemistry, but then anthro gives me kind of more of the reading, the humanity side of pre-med and medicine. And then when I thought I was set on my major, junior spring rolled around and I was like, I was looking around myself and every single one of my friends, every single Dartmouth student was doing a major and a minor, a major and two minors, a double major. I had a friend who was doing a triple major and I'm like, all right, I can't just settle with just one major. I have to add something more. So I met with my, I took a biology class for pre-med. It was a genetics class my junior winter, and I fell in love with it. I loved it so much. I had so much fun in it. I think part of the reason was because it was a flipped classroom. So it was a flipped classroom. So what that means is we watch the lectures for the course content at home, and then we go to class and do problem solving sessions. So I love that environment, kind of using my brain in the classroom rather than when I'm at home. But I met with my professor from that class the next term and tried to see if I could fit in a biology major in my final year at Dartmouth. And it just so happened that given kind of the prerequisites for pre-med that I took, I had enough classes to jam in a biology major in my final year. So now I am an anthropology and biology double major, which if you asked me like 2 months ago, I would have just said an anthro major.
And so was it a lot of classes you had to pile in order to make it work? Like,
probably like 6 to 7 classes. And so Dartmouth is on the quarter system. So we have 3 quarters. So I'm taking classes this summer. I'm taking 2 biology class. So basically for every term after, I'm going to be taking about 2 biology classes every term, which isn't like, it's not the most chill senior year that I could have had, but it's okay. I enjoy the biology classes a lot. So I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so we're about 6 episodes into this podcast, and now the world knows Linnell has a dog. I managed to keep the dog from barking on the first 5, and that journey has ended here. I want to have a segment of this show, and it's going to be called, like, Things Linnell Knows About You and Is Going to Tell the World, and which I know might scare you just a little bit. But we're going to talk a little bit more in a few minutes about your journey through writing essays, whether it was college essays or med school essays. But in some iteration of some essay, you wrote this incredibly heartwarming piece about your grandparents and how they would answer questions for you, right? They wouldn't actually, like, if somebody said, oh, Hirsch, what do you want to be when you grow up? They never actually let you answer the question. And so when Rashid asked you about what you were majoring in, that was where my mind went. And will you, I'm sure you're not the only one with this experience. And so would you mind sharing that with our listeners?
Yeah, sure. As you spoke, you've read the writing, you've read the story, but growing up, I blame the traditional Indian culture on this. Growing up, when just anyone visited the house and they're like, oh my gosh, he's doing so good in school. Like, what? You could do anything you want. What do you want to be? And then my grandparents stepped in and he's like, my Hirsch is going to be a doctor. And I'm like, wait, actually, hold up. Let me fix that. They step in and they say, my Hirsch is going to be a doctor. That was like kind of throughout my childhood, whether it's kind of the food that I ate, the religious practices or beliefs that I held, a lot of things were just given to me rather than I being consulted about it. So that's kind of what I was writing about in those essays.
I always just thought it was so cute. My Hirsch is going to be a doctor. And in fact, the great part is that that is actually not why you picked it. I'm sure it planted the seed, but life's journey actually really gave you an inside look at the medical community that maybe had something to do with that. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. You're certainly right about that. It definitely, planted the seed, or not even planted the seed. I'd say it opened like a road. Like, I knew that medicine is this thing that exists and as a career and as a kind of life's work. But I think what really solidified it for me were two things. After I completed middle school, so I grew up with a heart condition, a congenital heart condition, not serious at all. Like it was nothing life threatening. But that did result in going to a pediatric cardiologist every year. And one time I went in as an eighth grader, and the doc's like, oh, we should probably do surgery this summer. And I'm like, whoa, that's unexpected. I was not expecting that for my whole family. No one was expecting that. So after I finished middle school and before I started high school, I underwent open heart surgery. And that experience was honestly eye-opening. Like, I got exposed to the healthcare team, the team-oriented nature of a healthcare profession, whether it's being a physician, an anesthesiologist, a nurse practitioner. There's so many different parts to taking care of a patient. And it's not just like one person making all of the decisions. It's one person being like collaborating with so many other people and kind of making a collective kind of course of action for a patient that ultimately the patient should obviously make the decision for. But that experience, I think, just like the preoperative part of the operation, in which going into the hospital and seeing so many different healthcare professionals have this like just innate nature to help me as a, what was I, like 14 years old. I think that was super inspiring. And that's when that's when the seed was planted of pursuing medicine as a career. And then I think it was solidified a lot later when I was a freshman in college and I shadowed for the first time. I shadowed an ophthalmologist during my winter break after my first term at Dartmouth. And I went to shadow an ophthalmologist. And the first time I walked into the clinic, I noticed that when the patient was talking to the doctor and sharing their story, the patient was also making eye contact with me. And I'm like, I don't know anything about medicine. I'm just this like short little kid who's just like trying to make sure who's like, I don't get in the way. And the patient is sharing their story and we're complete strangers, yet they're still trusting me with this vulnerable story that they're sharing. And they looked at, I mean, obviously they're looking at the physician, but they also looked at me with a sense of like, trust and kind of a sense of like wanting to be helped. And I think kind of that moment was the moment where I was like, okay, yeah, this is definitely something I can do for the rest of my life. Just being there for, patients and honestly, really like complete strangers when you first meet someone. And the fact that the clinic room is one of the only places in the world where you can be vulnerable and be there to support a complete stranger, was definitely like an appealing aspect of medicine, and helps me kind of help others and serve in the way that I'd like to, during my time here on this earth.
That's such a beautiful answer. Thank you so much. And just a little footnote for our listeners. Ophthalmologist is?
Oh, an eye doctor. Yeah.
Okay. And this is one thing that long confused me. So in case it confuses anybody else, an ophthalmologist is an eye doctor who has gone to medical school. An optometrist, who generally does your eye exams and things like that, goes to optometry school. So they both get the title doctor, but one is a OD?
An MD and an OD, yeah.
And an OD. So a doctor of optometry versus a medical doctor. So just a little clarification out there. Hirsch, one thing, you know, you have this beautiful ability to share with our listeners the stories that have revealed these pieces to you. And when we talk about writing essays, you know, you've heard me say often, show, don't tell. And you have really figured out how to embrace that so beautifully. And so for our listeners, you know, one of the things when you tell somebody something, you say, I want to be a doctor because I want to help people. And while there's truth to that in many cases, it's not particularly original. It's not particularly visual and vivid that it's going to stick with your listeners. But if you tell a story about wanting to help people, as Hirsch just did in that last example of being in the room and being privy to somebody's, you know, kind of innermost challenges and vulnerabilities, it communicates it in such a way that makes it much more memorable. It sticks. The story sticks. And Hirsch, you've kind of experimented with a couple of different ways of writing those essays, but they all share that element. Is there anything that you want to share with our listeners about sort of how you embrace that? Is it something you always knew how to do? How did you manage that process?
Yeah, I think you're giving me a little bit more credit than I deserve. I do not think I'm that good of a writer, and I don't want people to think like, oh my gosh, this guy's a genius. He just writes, like, he spoke so eloquently sharing his story about why medicine. Like, I only was able to share that story because I've spent like months writing about that story in my essays. And I think that's a big thing to keep in mind about essay writing, in my opinion, is like, it's gonna take a while. That's when I first started with my college essay. I started out getting frustrated, like, because I sat down to write and nothing was getting on that Google Docs sheet, because I realized I was starting to write a final draft, and it's called a final draft for a reason. It's not gonna be your starting draft, and I'm kind of I got into that same trap. Now, as I'm writing my med school personal statement, in which I think I'm on a draft, like, is it draft six, Linnell? And I still don't think it's anywhere close to being where it needs to be. But it really, I think the piece of advice that I would share is like, starting to write, just put your thoughts on paper. Reflection is a big part. I think first and foremost, reflection is probably the biggest thing. You have to reflect. You just have to like sit down and just think about your life, which can honestly kind of get emotional a bit. Like, it was definitely an emotional kind of part of the writing process for me, reflecting about my life and then kind of picking and choosing the parts that I think emulate kind of my story as a whole. And then sitting down and writing about it. I think sometimes what helps, and it helped me recently in writing something, is outlining. I don't think I ever outlined when I wrote my college admissions essay, but I wrote something else for college. It wasn't an assignment for college, but it was something else that was kind of a narrative style piece of writing. And I chose to outline before I actually sat down to write about it. And that helped me so much. That definitely helped get the creative juices flowing when I just had to sit down and write about like what I wanted to write about, which sounds kind of counterintuitive, but it's super helpful because you have all these thoughts in your head. And if you just sit down to write a draft, like they're going to be all over the place and you're not going to be able to actually like write paragraph by paragraph. But if you start with an outline, it's just bullet points. And it's so much easier to just get all those thoughts in your head on paper and an outline, and then you can organize them the way you want to. And then you can start writing your first draft. I think that's a really, really nice way to go about writing kind of narrative pieces, which is what a personal statement is. And I wish I would have had that as when I wrote my college essay, but it's definitely helped me with my med school essay. And then, another thing is you have to consult with others. Like it's just anyone, whether it's a family friend, family, a teacher, anyone who you trust and who knows you. Or someone that you trust and who doesn't know you that well, because that's who college admissions officers are going to be. They don't know who you are. But I think having someone else look after it, I mean, read over it multiple times is super helpful, because you just get another set of eyes on it, a fresh set of eyes. You have this vision in your head, which probably looks fine on that paper, but someone else may look at it and they're like, what the heck are you talking about, Hirsch, in this essay? And that's totally okay. Whenever I give my essays to someone else to read over, I always preface with like, please be critical. Like you are not going to hurt my feelings. If you like tear this paper apart, that's what I want. I like, please tell me that I'm like, my writing is terrible so I can improve on it. So those are,
I want to interrupt you, and I want to say that you are so your own worst critic. you might not be on the cusp of winning an award-winning, you know, book yet, but your writing has always been solid. I dare say it's much better after 3 years of college than it was when you applied, but that's a good thing. It means you've grown. And there were one or two other things that I just wanted to kind of illustrate. And that is, I think you're very right about having other people read your work and people who don't know you. Because if they don't understand the story, then you've missed your mark. Because as Hirsch said, the college admissions people reading this, or the med school admissions people, are, they don't know you. And I think really the most important thing you talked about was the reflection. You don't want to just say, I did this, I did that. What you really want to include is, what happened as a result of all this? How did I grow? Oftentimes I will hear people say, and it makes me slightly nutty, is, well, don't write about anything negative in your college admissions essay. And what I would say to that is that we grow from those areas in which we are challenged. You know, life is not all unicorns and rainbows, and it's those moments that are difficult and challenging and maybe a little ugly from which we grow. And so if something happened that was not like shiny and lovely and positive, talk about how you grew from it. And so I loved that. I think the outline is a great idea. I think often as high schoolers, the thought is, just sit down and write and it'll come together, sort of. And I think you really need some, at least some key ideas, so that as you write those paragraphs, you can look back and go, does this relate to that original idea, or am I deviating? And get rid of it if you're deviating. My one word of caution with asking people who, you know, to read it is that if you ask 10 people, you're likely to get 10 different sets of comments. And so somebody might say to you, oh my gosh, Hirsch, that introductory paragraph was great. It was really moving. It touched me. It really drew me in and made me want to read more. And then somebody else is going to read it and be like, meh, I didn't really see the point. Or I think you should get right to the point and get rid of the narrative. And so, you know, I think it helps to ask somebody who knows this arena a little bit. And so keep in mind, and particularly I would caution with asking peers in the high school essay process. If you have an older peer, they've been through it, they know a little bit about it, great. But I guarantee if you ask 10 classmates, you're going to get 10 very different and often contradictory responses. So just kind of a small word of caution there. I think the most brilliant thing you said in all of this, and is a great life lesson, is don't take this criticism personally. This is not a character assassination. This is about helping you put your best self out there. And so, you know, for example, we were just talking and you were talking about, or I mentioned about you being your own worst critic. And so for me, I will often say to you, you're like, you're good, let that go. Because I don't want that. You have this vision in your brain of yourself in one magnitude, your mistakes, things like that. I have them in a whole other magnitude. And I'd like to think that in this case, I might be a little more objective, maybe. But those were such incredibly great lessons, and I'm super grateful for you talking about that. Thank you so much, Hirsch.
Yeah, of course. For writing essays is definitely the bane of my existence. I hate writing essays. I would much, much, much rather sit down and take an exam than write an essay. And writer's block is such a real thing for me. such a real thing.
And it's so funny to me because on the receiving end of those essays, even the ones where you're like, I hate this one, yeah. I still find merit to a lot of what you've said. And in fact, I think the version you're going to end up with is kind of a compilation of a couple of those essays because they all had some really great parts to them.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. That's the benefit of writing different drafts is you can compile and combine those different components.
All right. Thank you again. As we sort of take a step back from the essays and begin looking at your journey again through college, can you tell us about a significant extracurricular activity, something that really resonates and sits deeply with you that you've been able to do during your time in college?
Yeah, sure. I think a big one for me has been something unexpected. As a pre-med, you're probably expecting like me to say something health-related, volunteering at the hospital or shadowing or anything else medical-related. But for me, actually, the most like one of the most meaningful extracurriculars that I've done in college has been a part of Shanti, which is the Dartmouth Hindu student organization. And I didn't even, I didn't know they existed until my sophomore year of college. But they were there my freshman year as well, but I just didn't know about them. But the way I got introduced to them is it was Diwali, which is, kind of like the Christmas of the Hindu calendar. The biggest, like the most important holiday of the Hindu calendar. And it happens in the fall. And I got in, I was just walking across the green, which is like the center of campus, a big like grassy area. And I was walking and it was like the evening time and I see a bunch of people in like their traditional kurtas with like sparklers. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? We're in Hanover, New Hampshire. We're not in like New Jersey or another place with there's like just tons of Indians. But I was super shocked. And then I joined the crowd and I'm like, there was like this entire like program just for Diwali, to celebrate Diwali. There was like a prayer service. There was the spark, like lighting sparklers and lamps on the green. There was like a bunch of like thousands of lamps. I kid you not. And then there was like a cultural program, and then also home cooked dinner that fed like hundreds of people. And I was like, wait, this is amazing. What is this? I have to get involved. So that led me to Shanti and being involved. And then the next year, that was my freshman year, my sophomore year, I made sure that I was a part of the actual planning process and the process of making that event a possibility. And I think that is when I started like realizing just how meaningful Shanti is to me, and that I met so many different people. I think before I got introduced to Shanti, I was feeling a little bit isolated just culturally being at Dartmouth. Dartmouth is like the only thing bringing diversity to New Hampshire, or this part of New Hampshire. And the minute you step out of the Dartmouth bubble, it's just like there's like no diversity at all. And I was definitely missing my culture, my family a lot after a year. And Shanti kind of filled that space for me in terms of just being surrounded by other Indians, other Hindus, other like just like the practices that I grew up with. It was great. So I really got involved in it. And my junior year, the faculty advisor he was just like, he sent me an email and he was like, "You are president." I'm like, "Oh, okay, I guess I'm the president of this club now." So then as president throughout my junior year, I think that's when that's when I started being like the most involved, as you can imagine. So Diwali was a huge event. We start planning for it like weeks in advance, and it requires like more than 40 volunteers and coordination. And it's definitely a lot of work. Like my grades and my classes are put on a back burner, which they probably shouldn't be. But I mean, I just care that much about that organization and the community that it gives me. But that's the fall term. And then there's also Holi, which is a festival of colors for the Hindu calendar. And this past spring, we celebrated it and we kind of ordered a bunch of colors and put them on the green, the same space where we do Diwali. And a bunch of students just come out and throw colors at each other. It's a great, great scene. Very fun, super fun. Just like run after each other and try to throw color at each other. You should see the pictures of me afterwards. I literally, as we were planning it, I made it imperative that no one gets any colors out on me. I had a meeting to go to 30 minutes after. And yeah, no one listened to me. Like once the colors are out, people do not care what you say. So I literally pulled up to my, I didn't have time to shower. So I had to pull up to my meeting, like just as like as a chameleon. I was just so many different colors on me. And it was, yeah, it was definitely like a conversation starter. I was just like walking through the library, dripped in colors, but.
Nobody will forget you.
That is true. I mean, thankfully these were people that it was like a regular meeting. So like it was people that I was comfortable with, and close with, but, yeah. So that's a little bit about my career, extracurricular activity.
I love that story so much. And the reason, Fly listeners, that I love it so much is, you know, it was very clear that, for Hirsch growing up, his cultural identity is a big part of who he was. You spoke about the close-knit nature of his family, where his family's from, being first generation here in the States. And so when you go to someplace completely new and outside the norm of where you've been operating and functioning, sometimes you want that little piece of familiarity, right? It helps ground you. It helps enable you to build a community in that new space that you're in, as you continue exploring and identifying these new things you've never been exposed to before, and you're able to grow in sort of your culture and your experiences in a way that is just absolutely beautiful. He was appointed as a leader for an organization, totally unexpected. It probably stretched and grew him in additional ways. And so just lean into that journey as you step foot onto whatever campus it is you step foot on. Identify those opportunities that give you a sense of familiarity whilst also being able to grow in different ways. So great, great example to share. Linnell, it looks like you want to say something.
Yeah, there are two other things that really make that example stand out for me. At the beginning of the episode, you talked about Dartmouth as a PWI, a predominantly white institution, which it is. But that does not mean it is by any means devoid of diversity. And I think having an organization like Shanti on campus shows that a place like Dartmouth is willing to support and celebrate diversity. And in fact, the celebration, the Diwali celebration is huge, right? It's a campus event that draws, am I correct in saying it draws like hundreds of people?
Yeah,
from campus, from the community. And so I think for listeners who hear PWI, it does not mean you are the only person of color. And there will be, I think there are so many schools that have gone to really great lengths to make diverse populations feel comfortable in their midst. And I think this is one great example of it. The other really great thing that came out of this is that you got a letter of recommendation out of it. Would you, you know, people, are, you know, for med school, and so people might hear that and think that's great. How does a religious celebration relate to a med school rec? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So for med school, you need a lot of letters of recommendation, like 5 to 6. And the way Dartmouth does it is Dartmouth sends a composite letter. So we have our letters of recommendation from our professors and other members or mentors or anyone else. And there's one composite letter writer. So this is like that letter is sat on the top of all the other letters, and it's like 4 to 5 pages long, and it's like the main letter. And my composite letter writer, I asked the faculty advisor for Shanti to write my letter. And you're right, Linnell, he's not like medical at all. He's a he's a computer science professor. He doesn't know anything about medicine. And he was honest with me. When I asked him, he was like, I'm happy to support you in any way I can, but are you sure you want me to write this letter? And I was like, you know what? Okay, you're right. Let me talk to the pre-health office and see if it's okay. And they're like, yeah, it's totally fine. Like, as long as he is someone who you trust, who you feel like you've built a solid relationship with in your time at Dartmouth, then it's totally fine for him to write a letter. And I think you're right. Like, I think the reason I asked him is because, I mean, I've worked so closely with him in Shanti, whether it's planning for Diwali, planning for Holi, or even just like catching up and it, like, at weekly puja, which is our prayer service. But he's really been a kind of a constant kind of I'd say family member, honestly, on campus. And he's not on campus like right now. He had to travel to India, and that was so sad for me. It was really sad. It was like I missed that guy a lot. But he definitely has supported me a lot in my time at Dartmouth. And I thought he was the right person to write that letter for me, even though he's not medically oriented, which I thought it was fine.
Well, it was interesting because he really had so much to talk about in your, you know, commitment to diversity on campus, commitment to making these events so incredibly strong and solid. You know, there were so many other things that he could talk about. relative to your character, your work ethic. And then you could have teachers who have had you for those STEM classes talk about your performance in this class. But I think the beauty of making that connection with this particular professor is that he could speak to so many other parts of your application, and it's your involvement in this that opened that door. So thank you for that. Rashid, you ready to go to College Condensed?
Sure.
Okay. So, this is a kind of a quick section that we're just going to ask you for some quick feedback, on a couple of questions.
It's so hard for me. I feel like I always go on tangents.
No. It's, you are replete with information. What scared you most about going to college?
I think moving away from family. I mentioned that a little bit. I was from South Carolina. I go to college in New Hampshire. It's like a 14-hour drive. I've never made that drive. I always fly. And I think being so far away from home was very scary, leaving home. I mean, I wanted to be in that, I wanted to push myself out of my comfort zone, but that also meant leaving all my responsibility at home, which I was a little scared of doing. I have a lot of responsibility at home. I live with my grandparents, so I take care of them. And I was definitely scared of leaving them, but it's been three years now, and I think everything has worked out super fine.
Can I dig into the stories of things Linnell knows about you again?
Yeah,
you and I tried to connect to talk about your med school essay when you were on spring break, and we were trying to arrive at times, and you said to me, "I'm free until 3 o'clock every day." And so I wanted to know, like, well, what happens at 3 o'clock every day? And I'll never forget what you told me. You said, while I am home, I try to sit down, my grandparents sit down at 3 o'clock every day to have a meal, and I sit down with them at 3 o'clock every day to have a meal while I'm home. And I just, again, it's sometimes you say things about yourself in your actions, and your commitment to your family is one of those things that always stands out to me. And I don't know that you thought anything of that, but it was just such a great reminder to me about the priority you place on your family. And I love that. And I was super grateful that you shared it.
Yeah, I still don't think that is that like profound of a thing. Like, that's just like how I have grown. Like, I grew up, everyone sits together for the meal, and no, like, I don't think I've ever eaten by myself in my house before.
And it's not until you get outside of that and go to other people's homes where you're like, huh, not everybody does this.
Okay.
As you reflect and think back on college, is there a favorite memory that you have that just warms your heart when you reflect and think about it?
I hate this question so much. It's so funny. Me and my friends, we always we always say this question to each other at the end of every term, and we can never come up with an answer. Like, it's just like a favorite moment. Like, it's so hard to do that. I think that question is impossible to answer when you have so much time. Like, it's been 3 years that I've been here at Dartmouth and I've experienced college. I've had so many moments where I've just felt pure like bliss, just happiness. And a lot of that, it has to do with friends. Definitely not while studying organic chemistry, but I think just like my favorite moments would just be, honestly, some of my favorite moments would just be like the late night conversations in the dorm hall with friends. I think I'm very much a sit down and have a conversation kind of guy than go out and party with friends. But I think that's definitely one of my favorite moments, or not moment. That's happened so many times.
So many times. I appreciate that.
Do you have a favorite book, podcast, movie, something of that nature that you would recommend to our listeners?
Oof. Yes. Favorite podcast, One Fly Trio podcast. I think that's what I would.
Great answer.
I'm not the biggest podcast listener myself, and I would watch a lot of like movies, but that doesn't happen anymore that I'm in college. And then I would read a lot of books for leisure, but that also doesn't happen because I'm just reading for classes. So my podcast recommendation is the One Fly Trio.
We'll take it.
Hey, Hirsch, as you reflect on sort of our discussion today, and we've touched on a lot of great things, right? You've been able to help us appreciate and understand your journey, your family coming to the States, and then really helping to emphasize for you the importance of education, some of the things that earlier in life you've gone through in terms of really being able to point you in a direction towards the medical field, your choice and decision in Dartmouth, being able to navigate sort of the essay writing journey. You spoke about reflection, outlining, having another person work with you, and then not taking personally what others are saying, you know, as they help you craft that story. Extremely powerful. You shared things you've done on campus related to being able to stay connected with your culture whilst also growing in other ways. And you've shared a lot with us about some of the personal nature of what you've experienced and how much it's meant to you along the way. Is there anything up to this point in time you have not been able to relay or articulate to our Fly listeners that you want to make certain you leave them with before we close out today?
Yeah. Yet another question I hate. the broad questions always get me. I think what I'd say is to be open to different like opportunities or experiences, and that really applies to the college admission cycle. I think the comparative case of me and my brother is a good example, in which like my brother he stayed in Georgia, he stayed in state for his college admission cycle, and he's had a great time. But I was different in that I was very, very much open to being away and being outside of South Carolina, outside of like being far from family, even though I was a little scared. I wanted to do that. And I think it's honestly been such a blessing, like coming to an institution like Dartmouth. I always say I have a couch to sleep on in so many different parts of the world. I have friends from literally all over the world, and that's what an institution like Dartmouth does for you, is they make connections with, they help you make connections with people all over the world. And I think kind of clowning on my brother a little bit, he definitely can't say that he has couches to sleep on across the world. So I think that's my biggest piece of advice, is just don't be afraid to push yourself out of your comfort zone. I pushed myself out of my comfort zone coming to Dartmouth, all the way from South Carolina. I left some of my home responsibilities and had to kind of adjust in that sense. But I don't regret it one bit. I think coming to Dartmouth has been one of the biggest blessings in my life.
Excellent. Thank you, Hirsch.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for being on the show today and just taking time to really be super transparent, share your lessons of life and the journey from application through graduation as you start looking towards the next step in your educational journey. We really appreciate you, Hirsch.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.